You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. I hope all is well out there in podcast land, which is where you live. Unreal Alchemy, the first collection of Belladonna U stories, is available now for sale out there in the world. If you can't get hold of it where you are, let me know and I should be able to sell you a copy directly. But it's available on a bunch of different platforms, both as an ebook and as a paperback, with a beautiful picture of Juniper on the front cover. Okay, we are up to Kissing Basilisks, Chapter 11. Miss Juniper Creswell is not going to make things awkward. Dear Diary, it is not an exaggeration to say that attempting to transport the usual inhabitants of the Manic Pixie Dream House to another location in a hurry, without Hebe's usual pre-planned scheduling mojo, incorporating a highly calculated system for treats and bribes, is somewhat like herding a horde of cursed cats onto a broomstick. Sage had taken the band van already. This left us with May's tiny Volkswagen as our only alternative method of transport to broomsticks. This was a problem, because Viola and Jules had just drunk coffee, so couldn't trust their magic on a broom. But they were also the only people who had ever visited Ferd's old home. As they both refused to have anyone else boost them on a broomstick, they chose to travel in the car with May, Deck and Holly, leaving no one in the broomstick contingent of the Mercy Dash who knew where they were going. In the end, Hebe and I chose the rather precarious and erratic method of following the car on a shallower flight path than is generally recommended over a city. We got there in one piece, which is the main thing. I was worried about Hebe. She wasn't talking much, but she was also clearly thinking a lot. Luckily for me, there are no conversational expectations when flying, so nothing that happened between the Manic Pixie Dream House and Ferd's frankly terrifying rich person warlock mansion counted as an awkward silence. We arrived on the doorstep, the seven of us, somewhat in a state of déshabille. Viola had insisted we not delay for anything, including getting dressed. Hebe had managed to transform one of the towels into a pair of navy boxers for Jules, which was a relief to all of us, as it was terribly distracting being around someone wearing only a towel. No one needed to be constantly at risk of seeing a naked man first thing in the morning. We hadn't even had breakfast. As it was, he and Deck were both bare from the chest up, which seemed most uncalled for, even if it was clearly on the verge of becoming a very warm day. I would be uncomfortable at visiting a house of such evident wealth and privilege in my ordinary clothes under normal circumstances. But somehow, arriving in a nightgown had pushed me all the way through social mortification to an odd sort of boldness on the other side. At least most of me was covered, unlike Viola in her teeny shorts and band t-shirt, or Holly in an enormous t-shirt and leggings cut off mid-thigh. May was the only one wearing clothes, which led me to believe either that she hadn't officially gone to bed last night, or that she had taken her time responding to all urgent calls that occurred over the course of the morning thus far, including the fire alarm. Her day clothes looked a lot like Holly's night clothes, so the distinction was moot. Hebe looked by far the most civilized of all of us, wearing summer satin pyjamas and matching espadrilles, her bright hair still holding the red charm dye Holly had insisted they both wear for graduation, caught up in a loose bun. It wasn't the kind of outfit anyone had ever seen Hebe wear in public, but by sheer accident, she looked like she'd just walked off the beach at an expensive resort. It occurred to me this was the first time she had ever visited the house of her boyfriend's parents, which must feel odd, regardless of whether there was some kind of dangerous situation unfolding. As we all hovered there on the doorstep, improperly dressed and fretting whether a butler might appear if we pushed any of the buttons we could see down the side of the dark carved wooden door, I was fretting. It's possible they all had other things on their mind. There was a scraping sound from above us, and a window went up. "Oi, you lot," Sage yelled down. A little help? Third's house is trying to kill us. Viola swung around to Hebe. Give me your broom, Hallow. No, said Hebe, in a sharp voice, and leapt back onto her broomstick, soaring up to the window. I followed quickly, not wanting to leave her without backup. As I climbed ungracefully over the window ledge, Hebe shoved her broom at me, her attention already elsewhere. I leaned out and hovered them both down to the crowd below. Before any of our friends could use the broomsticks to join us, the window slammed down with a ferocity that made me jump. The white paint on either side of the glass stretched and ebbed, sealing over the window. I stared at it, wishing I hadn't given up my broomstick so easily. The paint stretching over the glass bulged into a face that glowered at me, and I moved away very quickly, bumping into Sage's reassuringly broad chest. Hebe had moved to the centre of the room but now stopped, staring at Ferd. He was stuck, by the looks of it, one hand outstretched against the bare wall, black veins of magic pumping from his skin into the room. He strained against it, slowing the flow of magic from himself into the house. Stop it, said Hebe. He didn't turn, didn't react. His eyes closed. He threw his head back and screamed with pain. Stop it! Hebe shouted this time, her voice ringing out with all the authority of a Victorian governess in a British stage play. Let him go. This time, the house obeyed. Ferd pulled his hand away from the wall, looking at it in shock, then turned around and stared at his girlfriend. Hebe, he breathed. Ferd, she said, sounding painfully chilly. Whatever was going to happen next between the two of them, conversation-wise, the rest of us probably did not want to be here to witness it. Given that there was not currently a door in this room, and all the windows were now sealed over, we were not going to be allowed to withdraw. Did you break up with me on the summer solstice? Ferd blurted out, his shoulders drooping in a manner that can only be described as heartbroken. Yes, said Hebe angrily. Was it not important enough for you to remember? That one confused him. He looked rather befuddled all round. I mean, said Sage helpfully, you also failed to remember that your house is a magical vampire, mate. Shut up, Sage, said Ferd and Hebe, gazing at each other. You made the house listen to you, Ferd said, flexing his hand as if it was painful. Houses get me, she said. Ferd, what's going on? I'm not entirely sure, but it has something to do with my parents. She stepped forwards, her eyes locked on his. Ferd? Yeah? Why can I taste your magic? He took a step forward also. Why did you break up with me? Hebe made an impatient sound and threw herself further forward. Now there was kissing. A lot of it. They clung to each other like two shipwreck survivors. As one, Sage and I whirled around and faced in the other direction, only to be met by a startlingly gorgeous, furious woman wearing even shorter shorts than Viola Vale. My face heated up just a little at her mere proximity, and I knew it was too much to hope that I wasn't blushing from nose to fingertip. Why am I holding a vase of tulips? Hissed the vision of beauty at Sage, clearly blaming him for this turn of events. The vase in her arms was very nice, and the tulips were striped. Tulips aren't even in season. You just get used to it, said Sage. It's a Hebe thing. The beautiful woman, whose long flowing black hair looked like something in a conditioner commercial, peered around his shoulder to where Hebe and Ferd were still making out like they'd been apart for months. And that, she said. You wait, Sage promised her. Any minute now, the rest of our band is going to break into your scary monster house, and then we'll really raise some hell. Is that worse than what's going to happen when my parents come back from brunch? She challenged him. A look of concern crossed his face. Oh, hell. Hebe, put your bloke down. We haven't rescued him yet. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.